following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland, from the home office. Studio A, Memphis, Tennessee. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for dialing us up, downloading us, streaming us, whatever it is that you do to get this program. I appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Mean it from the bottom of my heart, or the heart of my bottom, however you want to put that. It's been a wild week around here in the news. And I'm going to get into something here that is, and I don't do this. I don't really do this. But I feel like I have to, really. If you've been listening to this program long enough, there's a couple of quick takeaways here. You know, I don't really get into anything political, and I'm not going to do that today, not this time out. I'm going to touch on that a little, but I tend to say some unpopular things sometimes, which is fine. Everybody has their opinions on certain things, which is, you know, that's what makes the world go round, right? And I try to, you know, stay away from, you know, the mainstream stuff because you get that anywhere. But I think there's some things that we should talk about, really. One thing for sure here in this episode, and like I said, there's no two ways around this. There's two types of people here, people that will agree with what I say and people that will disagree with what I say. Okay. And that's all well and good. And we're going to lay down some interesting, an interesting point of view here and something to think about. You know, what I'm getting out of here, of course, is what is happening with these children. And you go, what kids? What are you talking about? Kids. And that's the problem. You don't know what's going on. There are children of potential immigrants that are being taken away from them and setting aside into some type of a camp. Call it a concentration camp. You can call it a holding center. You can call it whatever you want. But there's children that are being taken from their parents and held aside because their parents that have come here trying to find a new home have been deemed, quote unquote, illegal. I don't believe that. I don't think you could have an illegal person. I don't understand that. You can be an illegal immigrant. I get that. But, you know, the problem is, let's start with the very beginning here. Seeking asylum from one country to another is not illegal. And I know that what's divisive about a lot of this is you got these people that sit there and go, well, they don't need to be here. They should be deported. They should be collected, rounded up, put on a bus, and deported back to their country. Okay, fine, if that's the way you want to go with it. But why are the kids being separated here? This is the problem I don't understand. If you don't want the parents here, then why are you keeping the kids? Deport the kids back as well. And that's a part that a lot of people seem to be, they're not questioning that part. I don't get that. They're all saying the same thing. It's like an echo chamber right now. There's a lot of things that are being said that's like, Well, we don't like that the families being separated. That's just not right. That's just unfortunate. We hate that. We've heard it from everybody. We hate that. The First Lady has said, we hate that. Well, the President told the First Lady to hate it, so there's that. That's my personal opinion. And look, and here's the thing. Those of you who have listened to this program know where I stand when it regards that thing in the White House. I don't like him. I'm not afraid to say it. If I lose listeners, if I lose people who regularly listen to this program or the other or Radio Memphis because I said something like that, fine, go in peace. But here's the bottom line: here, it doesn't matter where you stand politically. If you agree that the holding of these children for whatever political gain is a good thing, then first of all, I'm going to tell you that you're wrong. This isn't a political issue at this point. It's trying to be made into a political issue, but if you agree with this, what's going on? We don't differ. We don't disagree politically. We disagree morally. I don't have any children. In fact, I'm not even a big fan of kids. But that doesn't stop me from being compassionate. It doesn't stop me from being understanding that these young kids being taken away from their families is wrong. And I know a lot of people are nodding their heads going, yeah, okay, I got it. Yeah, you're right. But we can't have these filthy Mexicans here. Is that what this is? It's worse than that, people. It really is. This has not been said either, and I'll say it. Because I've been following this thing since it started. And it's being shuffled under the rug at times. But here's my take on this. The single only reason these children are being taken from their parents and held in the United States while their parents are being deported back is so you can hold these children hostage, because it looks bad. It looks horrible. Everybody knows it. Oh, this is a bad idea. We can't be putting children in tent cities. We can't be storing them up and stacking them up like cordwood in an empty Walmart. Well, that's just wrong. But we're going to do it anyway, because I got to have money to build the wall. And that's what it boils down to. Now, that's where politics gets inserted into this, because it's the motive behind this madness. There are people somehow in charge that are holding children hostage so that thing can get money to build this wall, which has been a giant clusterfuck from the beginning, because it was, oh, we're going to build a wall and we're going to make the Mexicans pay for it. Yeah, they're paying for it morally. So is the United States. It doesn't really matter where you stand politically. And I'll say this and kind of leave it at this, but part of the joy of being an American is celebrating our differences. Culturally, politically, theologically, we've always celebrated those things. In the past, we have. Now it's because there are these gigantic wedges that have been inserted into our society. And people are afraid. You know, things that I've said in the past, things I've said here on this episode, are probably going to put me on a list. So fucking what? Put me on a list. I don't care. If you disagree with me, go fuck off, because I do not agree with this policy. Wherever it is that you stand on immigration, I want you to tell me why this is happening. And if you sit there and say, well, that's the law that the Democrats put into play, that's bullshit, and you know it. There is no law. Find that law. Tell me. Shoot me an email. Tell me what it is, so I can see for myself what this law states, where it says that when a family comes into this country, legally or otherwise, that we have the right to take their children away from them. I want you to tell me where that it is legal, because it's not. This was a policy that was put into play, from my understanding, from the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, that redneck bastard, and that thing in the White House. And they knew it was going to be unpopular, but this is how they play this game. We're going to do something so horrifying that we're going to get what we want out of this whole deal. Some 2,000 children from April to what, end of May? And there's other reports, however accurate they may or may not be, that there's some of these children are missing now. How are they going to reunite these kids with their families? How's that going to happen? And I've seen from many different reports, from many different sources, that the process by which they're doing this is sick. I know this show is supposed to be about fun and about, you know, having a great time and being a little sarcastic and comedic, but there's no sarcasm here. There's no comedy here. There's nothing that can be made fun about any of this. This is something I feel very strongly about. The parents come across with their families. They get picked up. ICE agents set the family over here. They come and they take the kids and they say, we're going to go give the kids a shower. And they're whisked off to some unknown location, never to be seen again. This is happening in the United States of America. What the fuck is wrong with you people? Why is this going on? And how can you even defend that? I don't understand that. But it's gotten to the point, at least with me, that if I have any type of interaction with any person who is going to defend this activity, I'm done with you. I won't speak with you. I won't even argue with you. the conversation is over. You have no grounds in realism, in morality, in politics, or law to defend that action. The United Nations is now saying, they've told the White House, they told the White House last week, they said, what you're doing is illegal, you can't do this. And the response from the White House, we're pulling out of the UN. The United States of America used to be a country about principle. It used to be a country about freedom. It was a country that celebrated diversity at one point in its troubled past. We've somehow managed to take ourselves to the brink of disaster and try and make the right decisions, try and make amends, try and do the right thing. But we can't do that right now. I don't understand this. Why is this happening? Now, look, I promise the rest of the show is going to be a lot nicer. We're going to get into some music and stuff. But I needed to take this moment to talk about this because I talked to, you know, a few friends that I do have and my wife. And we're sickened by this. And I see in social media some of these people who sit there and go, well, they're just illegal. This needs to be handled this way. There is not a single reason why you should support this, unless you're just as sick and twisted as the people that are in command. This is the same shit that has happened years, decades ago in Nazi Germany. The same shit was happening. And I know some people probably rolling their eyes going, oh, that's not true, dude. You know, you can't say that. Bullshit. I can say that. Because this is how it starts. It starts with this little stuff right here. We're going to take your kid. We're going to go give him a shower. The summer of 1983, I visited Germany. I went to Europe. Went on a thing for school. I was fortunate to go. And I went to Dachau, the famous concentration camp. There were thousands of them, of course, during that time. And Dachau has been turned into a museum. They didn't destroy it. They turned it into a memorial, a museum, so you could see the atrocities that were committed in the late 30s and 40s from the Nazis, the extermination of the Jews, and all those others that they felt fit into that category. And there's a part of the tour where you go to the showers. It's a big room. It's a big, big room. Think of it like if you remember your old high school gym, those big communal shower type thing. It was like that. Had a big iron door. You could get maybe 150 people in there. Square, dark. Shower heads from the ceiling. Probably a dozen or so. Up on the roof, there were soldiers who would open up the tops of it and drop cans of Zyklon B in there. It's a poison. It's gas. And then they would seal it up. And those that were in suffocated and died. And it's not a quick process by any means. It's horrifying. You can still see the scratches on the walls from those that died in there. It's a horrifying thing to see. I'm glad I saw it. I saw part of how dark humanity can be. Here we are, 2018. I'm not suggesting that this is happening. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that there are children being exterminated. That would be ridiculous. At least I'd like to think that would be. And yet we're doing something just as simple as the separation of families because of how certain individuals feel about racial equality or the equanimity of man. And I don't get it. I don't understand this. So I'm going to tell you now that anybody who supports this, the conversation is over, because you can't. I don't think there's a decent human being out there that can sit there and say with a straight face that this is a good idea. And if that comes out of your face, then I know you're not a decent human being. It's come to that. I'm not going to try and win somebody over. We're past that now. We've gone past trying to talk reason about these sorts of things. We've been bitching about this stuff for, what, 18 months now? 2 years? We're still fighting this? And yet, you're like, well, this is the way it's supposed to be, and blah, blah, blah. Well, no, it's not. You suck. And then out comes the name-calling, and out comes all of this, and there's no compunction from anybody to call it what it is. Blatant racism. Blatant hatred. Fascism. Destruction of humanity at its simplest core of morality. And one final note about this, and then I'll move along. That, of course, you know, you can lay the blame squarely at the feet of those two idiots I mentioned earlier, the Attorney General and the President. But I think also who's complicit in this, and this is highly unpopular, and I don't give a fuck, but it's true. The evangelical Christians are right on this because they keep supporting it. Oh, you can't have an abortion. That's wrong. But by God, we'll take your kid and put him in a tent city in South Texas in the middle of the summer with no air conditioning. No medical care. God, the food must suck. These prisons are making $50 a day per kid. That's not true, bro.
Look it up.
It's fake news, bro.
Fuck you.
Enough with the fake news shit. That just doesn't fly anymore. There's only one outlet of fake news, and that's Fox. Call it like I see it. And I'm trying to be reasonable. I've tried to avoid this sort of thing. But when you start dragging innocent children into this thing, children pulled from the breast of their mother. What type of monster would do that? And secondly, what kind of monster supports that? I don't get it, man. You got to do something. I don't know. Do I have the answer? Well, the answer is simple. If you don't want these people here, then kick them all out. We'll deal with that later. We can deal with that as reasonable human beings or as best as we can in some type of legislation. You have to sit there and do this and then blame other people for it.
Well, it's not us. We hate doing it. It's the Democrats. Well, it's this. It's that. It's what we don't want to do this, but we kind of feel like we have to
because I want the wall. Or I want this, or I want that. I don't have to do this, but I don't like it. You can make it stop now, but nobody's going to, right? Call your Congress critter, all right?
No, they don't listen. They don't pay attention. They don't care about me.
I don't care. Call them. Numbers add up. Call them, even if they agree with you or you agree with them. Call them. So stop this. You realize how bad we look? And it's going to trigger economic fallout. It's going to trigger the way people think of America. Because I don't know about you, but I'm not like this. This is somebody had said, well, if you don't like it, if you don't like the way the country's going, you just need to get out. Well, how about I stay and fight? How about that? How about I fight for my principles? Fight for my own personal morality. And it's not about me, you know, telling you that I'm going to throw some God or some holy book at you. You want to play that game? We can. But it's not about that. It's just something as simple as being human. Quit being so cruel. It's unfortunate. It really is. And I worked myself up into a snit now. And, you know, I'm going to have to find a way to change gears. But just think about this. Find a way to get involved. Find a way to stop it. And if you come at me with some type of a defense with this thing, come at me, bro. Fine. You'll understand quickly how I feel about it. And if this hasn't been perfectly clear in the past 19 minutes, then, you know, then I've got nothing for you. I got nothing for you, man. I can't straighten that out. So, you know. Be that as it may. That's the beauty of the power of the First Amendment is because I can sit here and say these things. You don't have to agree with it. Fine. Go on. Go in peace. Go spill your vitriol somewhere else, but I won't hear it and I won't support it. And if I lose listeners over it, then so be it. If I gain listeners over it, so be it. It doesn't really matter. It really doesn't. If this show were to somehow become canceled as a result of how I feel about this sort of thing, so be it. You know, it's one thing when you're fighting about policy and fighting about laws, and you've got this problem and that problem, and you use a child as a strategic maneuver in this country, in the United States of America. We're going to hold a child hostage because we want something. No, I don't like what America has become. And I certainly don't like that fucking monster that's doing this. Coming up, we're gonna have some fun. I know that. I just thank you for letting me get that off my chest. I just feel it necessary. Like I said, if it bothers you enough, get involved. And if you really support these things, then go away. Mark Wicklund came into the studio. He's part of the Bartlett Songwriters Alliance. He came in and joined us at Radio Memphis. We had a little chat about songwriting, playing music. Delightful man. Writes some really cool songs. He's a very fun individual. We had a good laugh in there. BJ Banks brought him in. Had a fine time with that. That's coming up here in just a moment. So we're gonna shift gears, go a different direction, and go that route. And it's harmless from here on out. I can promise you that. Before we get to that, though, I want to tell you about our friends over at thegreenmancbd.com. You heard a lot about CBD. What is it? It's cannabidiol oil. It comes from the hemp plant. It's sort of related to marijuana, but it is not marijuana. You will not get high taking this. If you did, it would be illegal because the man don't want you to smoke no dope. CBD oil, it can do a lot of things for you. I've talked to a lot of people that have been putting themselves on it. They have found that the benefits are fantastic. It relieves, it helps keep pain. If you suffer from chronic pains, shoulder pain, knee pain, foot pain, butt pain, whatever you got, this will help. There's still a lot of things that are being researched about this sort of thing, but even the Food and Drug Administration said we don't see any harm in it. We can't say that it cures anything, and we don't know that for a fact, but it's not going to hurt you. In fact, for most people, it helps. The Green Man CBD contains a wide variety of products from them, from edibles to oils and tinctures, vape kits, e-juice cartridges. It's all there on their website, thegreenmancbd.com. All your questions can be answered there as well. Plus, free shipping within the United States on orders over $50. They only ship here within the United States. So get on it while it's still legal. I think it's going to be around a while. Thegreenmancbd.com. Go get your CBD oil and start feeling better tomorrow. Get on the Memphis Brew Bus. Every Saturday at 2 p.m., we'll take a 3.5-hour adventure through the Memphis craft brewery scene. The Memphis Brew Bus stops at 3 local breweries for some special behind-the-scenes tours, talks with the master brewers, and, of course, tasting of their signature brews. While on the bus, you'll hear stories and learn about the history of beer. Plus, you'll get some music from the Radio Memphis Library. Go to memphisbrewbus.com and find them on Facebook. The Memphis Brew Bus. We'll drive you to drink.
Paul Crum is here. How you doing, man?
Yeah, okay, Rick.
Good to have you in. Yeah, he told me last week. He said, "Yeah, we're gonna bring him in here. We're gonna pull you off the bench and have you run this one." Which is great, yeah. And you got somebody with you?
Yeah, Mark Wicklund. Yeah, glad to be here. One of my favorite songwriters. So, yeah, glad to have him over here. You're living over in Arkansas now, aren't you?
No, I have a place in Germantown and a place in Arkansas, so I kind of split
home.
My time.
He has a vacation.
Second home in the natural state. Yeah. That's beautiful over there. Arkansas is great.
It is.
And land is cheap.
Nirvana is what it is. Yeah. Land is cheap. It's gotten actually a little more expensive, but it was reasonable when we bought it.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, head on over there, get out of the city for a bit. You know, don't have to put up with any of the nonsense happening in this town.
It's a recharge your batteries kind of place.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. I'm jealous now. Not that I'd have the time for it, but yeah, no, that's great. That's awesome. So Mark, you've been dabbling about in the music scene. I know you had a long career over at International Paper, but uh, you uh, sticking your feet into the waters of songwriting? And of course, you've probably been doing it most of your life, I would think.
You know, I started playing music when I got transferred down to Memphis. It was probably about a little over 20 years ago. It was I had a guitar and I didn't have any time to play it. And then when we moved down here, no friends, we just had to start over basically. So I picked it up and just started, you know, playing some songs or getting a chord sheet out and learn songs, listen to the radio, learn a song, that type of thing. So
sure.
I taught myself.
Yeah, that's how I learned. Yeah. Yeah, and then when you're playing with other people, you tend to pick up, you know, licks and stuff like that along the way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Have you been a songwriter all this time as well, or is, you know, aside from just playing other stuff, you just, you know, want to branch out into that?
Well, I've been writing little bits and some corny love songs and this and that through the years, but never really anything. Didn't really concentrate on it, much of it, until probably about 5 years ago. A friend of mine, he had a place over in Arkansas too, so we'd get together and we'd hang out, and it'd be some late nights. We'd just sit and he wasn't a musician, but he was a writer.
Right.
Based out of Little Rock. So we sat and, you know, we would just, I'd come up with a riff and he would come up with some words and then we would tweak it. And then pretty soon we had a handful of songs that we thought were pretty cool, but they've morphed and changed over time.
Sure.
And,
as they do.
It's a fun experience. Unfortunately, I lost him. He passed away a couple years back. So I kind of lost my songwriting buddy. So I've had to kind of pull it together and just, you know, try and do some of that stuff myself. My wife likes to help me write songs.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, a little collaborative effort on that side.
Definitely,
you know.
Yeah.
Keeping her, some of her songs are quite good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like the old thing about working with your spouse can lead to arguments too. I would imagine that songwriting doesn't necessarily have that that problem.
Yeah, there's one song where we tend to ride together to Arkansas when we first bought the place and started building the log home. And you know, I typically am a guy who gets behind the wheel and drives, and you know, I'm not a big talker in the car, and she's the opposite. So basically, we would, you know, get into this little tiff where, you know, how come you're not talking? What's on your mind? You know, and we got there one night and basically wrote a song about that, which was
Awesome.
Fun.
That's awesome. Hey, well, you know, sometimes the inspirations will happen at odd times.
Yeah, true.
You know, it just kind of comes to you. Yeah, it's because it's, I know it's a struggle for a lot of songwriters to not want to force anything. You know, you just kind of have to let it happen.
I think you're right, because it's, you know, Paul's really good at his putting his lyrics together and making it turn out into a...
Paul's a poet.
Yeah, right. It's a craft, you know, where...
It is, yeah.
Sometimes it can be too corny, and other times it just falls into place, and that's, you know, kind of like John Prine, you know, basically something like that, where he doesn't go into great detail, but he just paints a great picture.
Intentionally too corny is okay, though, yeah. Because you got some, Paul, you got some sarcasm in your music.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah. it comes from my personality, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah.
I tend to be that way. But, try to tell a clever story.
Yeah.
Clever turn on words here and there. But, like I say, it just comes organically. You can never force it.
Yeah, because I've heard that it'll happen. You'll be thinking of something, and then there'll be an interesting twist of a phrase that'll just pop up in your head. Two or three words, maybe four words, and then you build a whole song around that.
Oh, sure. And you hear that all the time from songwriters, you know, successful songwriters. That, you know.
I got to use this phrase. I got to find a way to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
that's awesome. Let me grab this break. We'll come back. You want to play a little bit for us? And,
and
do that kind of thing. Did you bring a guitar, too? You didn't?
No. I rode my motorcycle today. So.
Ah, I got you. It's a good thing I have a guitar hanging out there on the wall. If you wanted to play, you can. BJ couldn't make it, so he sends Paul over here. And anything new happening over there at the...
Well, as a matter of fact, the reason BJ couldn't make it today is he's doing a presentation with Richard Hervey and Robin X and Sarah Williams to the high school. That looks like it's going to happen. Bartlett High School is going to create a music business curriculum.
How cool is that?
Songwriting, and yeah, it's a very cool thing. I think the fact that we've been able to accomplish that in just, you know, after a year and a half of being together, quite remarkable. And they're doing some live recording in the classroom today, you know, a little demo.
Yeah, just to show them how what they can do.
And a little hands-on experience for the students there. And hopefully trying to, you know, generate some interest in songwriting among those kids. So it's going to be a very cool thing. And it's going to be the first of its kind program in the state of Tennessee.
What I like about it is it's not just, you know, tapping into that, hey, I want to be a musician, or I want to be a rock star, but it's also tapping into, hey, I want to produce, I want to record, I want to, because there's so many facets of this industry,
right, yeah.
You know, and exposing that to these kids that they never thought about. That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and we're trying to expose them to all facets of that, you know, by showing them that, hey, you don't have to be just a rap artist, you don't have to just, you know, be a guitar shredder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all sorts of ways to get involved in this business.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and got a, you know, did a showcase a couple weeks ago that turned out real well. I've got a festival gig coming up this Saturday, the Memphis Local Music Festival.
That's right, yes. I've seen some posts on that, yes.
So,
a lot of artists on that. Yes, it looks like it's going to be really a good one.
Lots of folks. I hope so. I have no idea what to expect. They've got me at 12:45 on the Brinson stage.
Where is this festival?
It's downtown near Brinson's, wherever that is. I don't have the address, but we can look it up.
I think I'll look it up here.
Yeah, look up on our Facebook and stuff. My first experience with it. And,
this is the first I've heard of this particular festival.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it is backlash from not too many Memphis musicians playing in Memphis in May.
Well, it very well could be.
I mean, I know that, you know, we get like the blues tent and stuff like that, you know, and there might be one or two that, you know, like, well, North Mississippi All-Stars they'll wind up on a main stage, or Lucero, you know, if they're around, but...
Well, that crossed my mind, the scheduling of it. You know, it's between the music fest and the barbecue fest, you know, that week in between.
Right.
So, you know, maybe that'll help draw some folks down there. But I'm interested to see how it all turns out.
It'll be fun. Yeah. You know, everybody's always up for some good music. So, and that's the beauty of the local festival. You know, you said it's on whose page?
Yeah, I mean the lineup was probably 50 people on it.
Yeah,
was that about that? And it was some good.
Ah, about it.
Great people.
Two stages running from I think 12:30 until 9:30 that night.
Yeah, May the 12th, yeah. Brinson's downtown. 10 North 4th Street. If that helps. It's downtown.
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 That's about as downtown as you get.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can get your tickets for that. It's the second annual local music festival. It's a community and family-themed event going after downtown residents, employees, tourists visiting the city for Memphis in May, Memphians who enjoy local artists and local food.
Yeah, they did stipulate that I couldn't sing any sexually explicit lyrics.
Well, they just took the fun right out of your sails,
you know,
didn't they?
Half my songs are gone.
It's like, oh my God, that's like my whole thing.
You boil it down to one song now.
You're just going to play it for a long time. yeah, tickets are available at eventbrite.com. So there you go. Mark, you say you're getting out, you're playing some, you're doing the open mic thing?
Yeah, I've got something coming up over in it's a new brew house in Mountain Home, Arkansas, and it's called Raps Baron. They named the brew house after, I guess, Mountain Home was originally called Raps Baron before it changed their name to Mountain Home, and so I'm going to be playing out there May 19th, and hope to see all my hillbilly friends come in and hang out for a craft brew and listen to me for a couple hours, but Other than that, yeah, I've been playing a lot of open mics lately. I played with, I played over at TJ Mulligan's last Tuesday with Keith Blanchard.
Oh, yeah.
He asked me to come in and play with him, and that was fun, just to play a couple songs, play, you know, a set. So it's all good.
It's all good. Yeah. It's all good. Well, how about a tune from you?
Sure. Yeah, I've got, this one is called Please Don't Call Me Elvis. Sitting here in my trailer, you're adoring eyes at me. You're thinking I'm something, and one day I might be. But honey, that middle name got more letters and cents. And this old trailer is the present tense. Two more beers tonight, then some whiskey. Singing all those tunes that are kind of risky, and you thinking I'm something, and me thinking I might be. So don't call me Elvis, please don't call me Elvis, it don't mean nothing. Anymore. Sitting here in my trailer, ain't nothing better. The tune off the top of my head, it's only a middle name, it ain't my claim to fame. He's him, and I ain't to blame. So don't call me Elvis anymore. Just you here in this palace for me. Just a touch from you and a tune will commence about love and lust, and it's the present tense. And you thinking I'm something, and me thinking I might be. So don't call. Please don't call me Elvis. It don't mean nothing anymore.
Very nice.
Thank you.
I like that. There's a little Paul Simon in there, isn't there?
Yeah, sort of. There's that and, I don't know, some James Taylor or something.
Oh, like sure, Mike.
He's sort of like a guy that I look up to as a god as far as his music talent goes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Was that the stuff that kind of got you into this? I mean, it was James Taylor and...
Yeah. You know, actually, the first song I learned... was by Robert Earl Keen, mm-hmm. out of Texas, and he started. I loved James Taylor, but you know he plays some very unusual chord structures, and
right.
for my fingers it was not going to work so well until I figured it out. But Robert O'Keefe is a good boy, and he had some really, he's write some really good songs. So
that's the first song you learned was a Robert O'Keefe song?
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. First song I learned was the Monkees or something.
last train to Clarksville.
Well, you know, back then, first garage band, we played Stepping Stone.
Yeah, oh, that was a great tune.
I think we played it with three chords instead of four, but, you know, you learned Wild Thing and Hang On Sloopy, and all those songs basically had the same chord progression.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. And it's the same beat, really. just learn the lyrics and start screaming a lot, yeah.
Huge power chords.
Yeah. And, just, you know, a few of the lyrics because, you know, back then there was no internet, and some of them were published in Hit Parader magazine.
Right. You might find some of them, yeah. Yes, yeah.
And, the others you just made up as you went along, you know. Here and there.
that's what makes it wonderful. It's not the song that I wrote, but I like it. Yeah, because there was that whole thing with Louie. The FCC had gotten involved, and it's really just kind of a dumb little thing. Then they had like a microphone and a washtub hanging from a ceiling in a garage, and
the story I got was that it was in a studio, but it was one mic.
It was just one mic.
One mic. And and I think as a matter of fact, the lead singer just had some dental work done, so he was still all numbed up on Novocaine, you know.
It wasn't singing right.
Yeah. So, but that whole story's hilarious, you know, because like you say, the FTC got involved, or FCC, and you know, there's nothing there. There's no.
Radio stations were being threatened with their very existence if they played this song, and
wow,
and it turns out that it was really a cover tune of an old sea shanty.
I remember an older girl on the school bus on the way home telling me what all the lyrics were.
Wow.
Seriously?
Really? So you go back and you go listen to it over and over again, try to pick that out. That's funny.
Risque.
Oh, it was very risky. Paul McCartney has a pretty amusing tale about some of the lyrics as well, what he had told it was told it was, but not necessarily friendly to be broadcast at this particular time right now, but nevertheless. How about another tune, Mark, before we grab a break?
Yeah, sure. This one doesn't have much of a story. It was just sitting around. It's more of like a bar song, you know, where you're kind of sitting at the bar and I've got a couple of them that I like that, and I'm not sure why. Anyway, it's called Pour Another Glass of That Sweet Red Wine. Pour another glass of that sweet red wine. Got a song in my head, can't you see me smiling? I can read you like a book, it's time I turn that page. Are you listening to me, baby? I'm rattling your cage. Rattling your cage. I play music for a living, and I need some inspiration. You seem to be type to provide that motivation. I got a song up in my head that needs to be set free. Are you listening to me, baby? Your next drink's on me. Your next drink's on me. The place is kind of loud, the band's a little crazy. Is it you or this red, red wine that's got me feeling a little hazy? Well, you've got that special look, think you might be the one. Are you listening to me, baby? Or's the cat got your tongue? Has the cat stole your tongue? Thank you. keys to my truck. Let's head on out the door. There's plenty of gas, put your foot down on it. What are you waiting for? Another glass of that sweet red wine. Why am I even trying?
Very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's very, it's very cool. I like that. That it just, it paints a very kind of a, almost an innocent, sweet picture, doesn't it?
In a way, it was always hard for me to come to an end on that one. You know, as far as where. How that really turns out, you know, what happens.
You want to keep it going.
Yeah, you want to kind of keep it going. It could probably be one of those songs that goes on forever. you got to stop it somewhere.
Yeah, well, there is that. It's the whole thing about good art being abandoned.
Yeah.
You know, that's about that point. That's way good. I notice you tend to play a little bit of harmonica as well, Mark.
Yeah, it was sort of an accompaniment. I never really formally learned how to play the thing. I just try and find the right key and just buzz into it a little bit.
Before we got on the air, you were talking about your trip to, was it Poland? It was.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, no, play more harmonica, play more harmonica. They just love the thing. Right?
I played a set in Krakow, Poland, and in an open mic. And it was the coolest experience because there were a lot of musicians there that were playing too, but a lot of them were expatriates and expats. And then there were also... just a lot of locals, and you know, I played one or two songs with the harmonica in there. They wouldn't let me get off the stage and want me to keep playing harmonica songs. I said, I don't have any more. I can just make one up.
Yeah, put the guitar away. We just need you to blow on that thing for a while.
They truly love that. Well, I think it's because of Memphis. You know, Memphis and harmonica is sort of, this is that type of town.
Well, did they get excited when they learned you were from Memphis?
Yeah, they did. They did.
I've heard that.
We have a big presence there, though, because of, you know, international paper. But still, this particular crowd was sort of an underground crowd that really didn't, they were not into the business world. So it was really cool that they fell in love with the fact that I was from Memphis.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Mark Bryant, I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
Did some traveling around Washington, D.C. and up in the Northeast. I think they were scouting out colleges for his daughter or something, but they went to some open mics and got the same reaction. You know, people found out they were from Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, well, you can, you know, we'll boost you up in the lineup tonight. You know?
Oh, I've talked to rock guys that have, like, toured, like, all through Europe. You'll do, like, a, you know, a week or 10 days of one-night stands, and they wound up playing. They had a rare day off, and they stepped into this little club in Norway, and the bartender said, "Where are you guys from?" And he said, "We're from Memphis." He goes, "Okay, hold on." And he kicks the band off the stage. And there were just some local guys, you know. He says, "You guys are done. Get out of here." And they said, "You're up next." And we did what? What are you talking about? He said, by the time that they had finished, there was a television crew that had shown up.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's like, oh, there was a Memphis band playing here in our town. And that's there's something to that. Yeah. You know, and then you go into a venue here in Memphis, and it's like tumbleweeds are blowing through the club, you know, because Memphians are so, you know, blasé about it. Mm-hmm. I'll catch them next time.
Well, yeah. And if you don't have Proud Mary in your repertoire, you can't.
Proud Mary, really, Mustang Sally, all.
You definitely can't be a Memphis blues guy.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. It's nuts. How about another tune?
Sure, I can do one. Let's see, this one. Do this one. It's called "Whiskey on My Mind." It's a new one I wrote. Mm-hmm. In fact, we did it at the Songwriters.
Yeah, I played this one.
You played bass on this one. Mm-hmm. Oh, the wheels came off the track. I know you ain't coming back, so you leave me all alone.
So you left me in this place. A few more shots of whiskey will erase. Now I got whiskey on my mind. Now I got whiskey on my mind. Smoky bar and an empty glass. Fill it up and forget the past. I saw you the other day, standing on the corner on Broadway. You were talking on your phone. Seems the thought of me is long gone, gone. Now I got whiskey on my mind. Now I got whiskey on my mind. Smoky bar in an empty glass. Fill it up and forget the past. Fill it up and forget the past.
Very nice. That's the romanticism of a nice quiet bar and a drink, isn't it?
Much, yeah.
It's kind of a common theme for you, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of is. I'm starting to worry.
There's nothing to worry about, man. No, because it's there. Clearly, there's something to it. You know, nowadays when you go, there's not any of these really quiet bars anymore. It seems, you know, the good old fashioned dives. They just don't seem to be like that anymore. You know,
that's true.
The hipsters all took it over, and now it's like old fashions and cordials and
bars are way too noisy these days.
Oh yeah.
Well, you don't really find a smoky bar anymore either, you know. So
no.
That's.
Well, I know of a few. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. There's a few. There's only a few, maybe two or three left in town, though. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. Of course, I could do without that. A lot of people still love the cigarettes.
Oh yeah.
And they always manage to sit down by me. I think they gauge the wind first, you know, and say, okay, this is going to blow directly up his nose.
It's where we're going to sit, right here.
I think I feel your pain there on that one. I've been there, too.
Yeah, that's why it's just there's that notion of the, hey, this is a cool vision to talk about, though, you know. And it's there's always, at least for me, there was always that crusty old guy that had been sitting at the bar for the past 40 years. I think built the place around the guy, and he's just filled with these really sad stories because I remember a time when I wanted to do this and I didn't, you know. I was a failure at this, or I fought in the war, and and he's always sitting there just constantly just pouring cheap liquor into him, you know.
Well, I guess I better not play the old drunk song because that falls right into that category.
Well, no, by all means, yeah. Please do. I mean,
segue.
I'm just kidding.
No, that's because that's kind of how that's a slice of society that has changed, and it is changing, you know.
Yeah, well, that song, the old drunk song, was one that that my friend Jim Clemens, who passed away, he had started writing the lyrics to that one. It was sort of at the end of his. You know, he had some cancer and some stuff, so it was right at the end of that whole thing, and so he was just sort of kind of getting nostalgic about things and what he's done in his life, and he must have had a down day when he wrote that one. He wrote the first couple, probably the first set, and then after that, I had to kind of fill in after that,
right,
all together again. But yeah, it was. When I started looking at the names of the songs that have got in here, I was like, man, I guess I should write something positive, like.
don't change your style just because of that. No.
I write whatever comes to my mind. I keep notes a lot about things, and I get a riff going, and then I have to try and figure out how to put words to it. Or I don't know if that's how you do it, Paul. Do you come up with the words first?
Generally, yeah. Generally, I have the words, or sometimes the melody comes with the words, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I completely reinvent it. So.
Yeah, because the melody is often it's a lyrical melody sometimes, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Just by the pattern of the flow of the words.
Yeah. Exactly. Usually there's a phrase, there's a first line, you know, that'll come to you, and you just sort of build on that. I never write around the theme, you know. I never say I'm going to write a song about this, you know.
I find myself trying to do that, and I was told a long time ago, you know, just get to the chorus. That you can start it off with the chorus, because it all comes around to the chorus anyway. So if you've got a chorus that has a hook, you know, that makes a good song. But, you know, not all of them are like that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Everybody's different.
It's all, I guess, in feel. You know, there's no really hard, fast set rules about songwriting, is there?
No. And, you know, I'm
just stay in the key, right?
Yeah. I'm sort of a rebel when it comes to that, you know. Being in two different songwriters organizations, you know, sometimes people want to teach that or preach that, you know, well, this is the technique. This is, if you want to be a successful songwriter, this is what you got to do.
First verse, chorus, yeah, verse, like, bridge, chorus,
forget that,
end.
You know, I'm not gonna follow any formula.
Well, this is how they've made hit records.
I refuse to be successful, damn it.
I refuse to be successful. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Hey, but if it works for you as a songwriter, as a performer, then, you know, who's to argue, right?
Right, yeah.
You know?
True.
And I'm sure there's probably a lot of merit to that, but that's just not for me.
Sure. Man, go listen to a Bob Dylan record and come back to me with a formula.
Yeah.
There isn't one,
right?
You know?
14 verses and no chorus.
And there it is.
Or 14 choruses and no verse.
Yeah. And the next thing you win the Nobel Prize for literature. Is that what it was? Is it what it was? Or poetry, I think it was.
Yeah.
Truly amazing.
Oh, absolutely. How about some more music? You want to do the old drunk?
Mark's? I might just do, I'm going to do one called the Cookie Jar. It was written about, and the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Uh-oh.
It was written about some friends we have in Arkansas, and they basically, there's a lot of hippies that come from that area up in
Well, sure, house. Yeah.
And they're just trying to make it, and so basically we, Julie and I and Jim sat down and we put this song together. Oh, the cookie jar got empty, Carla got upset. Sam, he went outside to sneak a cigarette. Carla put the kids to bed, worried about their debt. Sam, he considered a fate he'd never met. They're just hard-working farmers, hippies with a dream, trying to live off the land, no breaks in between. No breaks from the weather or from the government. No breaks, it seems like nothing can fill that cookie jar. Well, the tractor needs a lot of work, and the well is running dry. Carla still has student loans, and it makes her want to cry. So Sam picked up a second job, enough to pay the rent. Carla sells potatoes down at the farmer's tent. They're just hard-working farmers, hippies with a dream, trying to live off the land, no breaks in between. No breaks from the government. No breaks, it seemed like nothing can fill that cookie jar.
Yeah, they're hard-working farmers, hippies with a dream, trying to live off the land, no breaks in between, no breaks from the weather or from the government, no breaks, it seems like nothing can, no breaks, it seems like nothing can, fill that cookie jar.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
I mean, that's no doubt comes from knowing these people. Right?
Mm.
Yeah, that, true. And no breaks from the government. You know, I mean, small farmers don't get that. You know, the bulk of the farm subsidies go to that top 1%.
Oh yeah,
like the rest of the economy.
Oh, it's like everything else. Yeah,
1% of the industrial farmers get the government money, and the small folks are spread out.
He's got a really had a really good garden going there too, where he could make enough for him and, you know, 40 other people basically. So they did go down and sell quite a bit at the farmers market in town. But it's definitely a true story.
Yeah, I could tell.
Writing about the things that you know is what really makes the song tick, I would think. You know, I mean, it's like with rock and roll. There's the whole fantasy world of rock, you know, and some of it's a little too creepy. And then you've got country, which is this idealistic, dreamy state. And then there's, you know, blues, which is a little more realistic. And then what you guys are doing, which is talking about people. It's about the situations that people encounter that you may not consider, it seems.
I think so. I think it's what I'm always trying to do is paint a picture, kind of like you do in your songs, where you can put yourself in a spot where, you know, tells a story and there's a beginning and an end. Sometimes there's really not an end, but you know, it's still something that you know, you can visualize in your head.
Yeah.
And I've got two or three songs now that I've written about people I know, you know, like you just did there. And you know, that's a very cool thing. Who doesn't want to be immortalized in song, I guess, you know.
Well, depending on the subject matter, of course.
But, you know, to make enough of an impression on you that you want to put it down into song lyrics.
I mean, the circumstances that people find themselves in may seem extraordinary and very rare, but in actuality, it happens to a lot of people. You know, and there's... When you do that, when you put it into a song and you perform it, somebody hears it and they go, "Man, I think I get what this guy's saying. I've been there," you know, and that makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. You know, and the more you travel, the more you run into other individuals, the more that, I guess, fuels that or fills up your notebook. You know.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you just all you have to get is a little small idea, and you can build from that. But I've got a whole book of just stuff written down that it may have started on and I never finished. So you probably had the same thing.
Yes.
It's like, well, I might come back to that someday, but you know,
you might like take several of them and combine them into one, right?
Yeah.
I find that you go back and look through those pages, you know, and you think, hey, damn, that's pretty good. You know, I need to finish that.
Or what the hell was I thinking?
Yeah.
It's all perspective, because time changes that just a little bit too. It's like, you know, musicians will often say, you know, songs that we've written and recorded often take on different lives of their own, you know, long after those sessions were done and immortalized in some sort of, you know, I would say vinyl, but you know, we've moved on from that. But you've recorded it at that moment. You just caught that song at just that particular time, but you know, 4, 5, 10 years later, that song just changes completely.
Yeah, you were talking about trains earlier, but being the studio being close to a train track, and my house is too close to the train track that comes through Germantown. And I've got two dogs, and they can't stand it when I play harmonica; they howl. So I can't play harmonica around the dogs.
That's hilarious.
The one dog howls in key, the other one howls out of key. So it's really nerve wracking when you're trying to record something. But
got a tone deaf dog.
Yeah. But I was just finishing up with the end of a song, and I got just it was running, it was recording, and it was just basically I was fading out, and here comes a train. You can hear the rumbling and rumbling, and then it just passes by, and it's on the recording. I couldn't stop it, but it actually didn't turn out too bad.
Yeah.
Because it was there, but it's real.
It worked, yeah.
Like recording in a thunderstorm, it's there. It's you can't stop it.
No, it's that reality. It's capturing that moment.
Yeah,
you know, and that's I think a lot of musicians and a lot of people who just go into studios forget that you're trying to capture a moment. You're not just capturing a song. You're trying to there's an emotion. There's a thing that's going on there. You've gone through the trouble of crafting this thing. Should be a palpable thing. And then the environment by which you've recorded it in, sure, we want it clean as much as you want to, but at the same time, something happens. There's a reason for it. I mean, well, it was Buddy Holly and the Crickets. That didn't that happen? It was a cricket in the studio.
Right, the cricket was in the wall.
Yeah.
Or so says the movie.
That's a good point.
Which I watched recently. I saw the guy about that this morning. I love that movie.
It was Gary Busey, wasn't it?
Gary Busey,
yeah.
Well, he did a good job in that.
It was right before he lost his marbles.
Yeah.
Highlight of his career.
I think so. The Buddy Holly
film. Yeah, I saw him portray the bear, though. He played Bear Bryant.
Did he really?
Yes, he did. And that movie sort of got swept under the carpet for some reason. You can't even find it hardly on eBay or anything now.
Wow. Hmm.
I didn't know
that bad, huh?
I didn't think it was all that bad at the time. But
but
that was coming off of his Buddy Holly. So I was sort of a fan, I guess. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, there's that, sure. But, Got time for one more if you want to do one.
Yeah, well, let's do the old drunk then. We might as well. We talked about it.
And this came from partly from your friend that.
Yeah, he had started the song, and
he never finished
it. Finished it, no. We had. And his handwriting got terrible at the end.
Yeah.
So instead of typing, he would handwrite things, and I'd have to try and decipher it, But before that, he would send me an email with typed out, so I knew what he was trying to get at. Of course, he would say, "Now this is play this in a like Texas swing." And I'm like, "That's what's in your head, but I have no clue as to how you really want me to play it, because I would have to make up." The words were there, but I'd have to make up all the music to it.
Sure.
And so he would try and tell me how to do it. The music was in his head, but it was really hard for him and I to come together on some of that stuff. So I would just start things, and he'd go, "Okay, I think I like that take. I think you're doing a good job with that." So anyway, this is called Old Drunk.
Just an old
coming old drum. I'm an old drunk.
Right on. That's nice.
Thank you.
That's very nice. Mark Wicklin, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Crum, Memphis Bartlett Songwriters Alliance. Find them on Facebook, also online, BartlettSongwritersAlliance.com. Check out the events, get on over there, have some fun. Best of luck with this whole thing with the Bartlett City Schools. I think that's
really,
going to be
really excited about that.
Sounds like it's almost a done deal. So, from what BJ was telling me, it seemed like
take what BJ said.
Oh, I know. Oh, exactly. I've known him for he's
forever optimistic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is, a lot of people getting involved in the school system, and so I think it has a potential of really being something great. And, sort of what we envisioned when we started this whole thing,
Sure. When schools started taking arts out of their curriculum, I was one of those guys in school that took the arts, I studied the arts. I felt it necessary, Mm-hmm. I wanted to do that. My family was thankfully rather supportive about it. And the schools decided, nah, you don't need all that. Here's some more math. Yeah.
But we're excited to that they're going to include that in the curriculum. And, they're bringing in facets of it that I didn't even think about. They're involving the video department.
Mm-hmm.
They've got student photographers coming in, so they're sort of including the whole fine arts program. Into it. So
that's great, actually. The vocational stuff has just gone by the wayside, so mm-hmm. That's great to see that coming back.
Yeah, indeed.
And it's good that it's coming from the community. It's not just the school system, because it's coming from people who know what they're doing. Yeah, and that's important. I think that's very cool.
Yeah, when you bring in people from the community,
who play and know how to write and teach a 12-year-old how to write songs about whiskey.
Yeah, and old drunks.
That's the way it works.
I want to thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Anytime, my friend. Yeah, come by and see us sometime.
He's got a song about killing a possum or a raccoon or
armadillo.
Armadillo. Okay.
He'll have to play for you next time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do you have anything recorded? Is it available for sale? Or
I do. I've got my website's kind of squirrely right now because she's working on it, but it's markwicklin.com, and there's a CD out there. I recorded a CD in Billy Weir's studio probably four years ago now.
Right.
And so that's out there, and there's some stuff out there. I'm going to be posting some more videos and things.
Oh, good. Good, good. And then you got the thing happening in Arkansas at the brewery, right?
Yep. At Raps Baron.
Raps Baron.
Home.
There you go.
Hi, this is Reverend Oma from the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop. The Broom Closet is your one-stop shop for all of your metaphysical needs, such as candles, gemstones, herbs, gifts, and more. We now also stock CBD oil, vape kits, lotion, and edibles. The Broom Closet is also host to monthly workshops, rituals, and drum circles for those interested in conscious living. The Broom Closet is the only place to get your cards read by me, Reverend Oma, or one of our other amazing readers. Discover the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop in historic downtown Memphis or online at thebroomclosetmemphis.com. The Broom Closet, let us help you light your path.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
The introverted ones are the ones we want to put on the radio over here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rick, I don't know if I
could. Oh, come on. It's a lot of fun when that happens, because then there's like, what the?
I'd have to put up this plastic screen to protect them.
We string a mic over to the other room. No, it's because that.
No, you wouldn't do that. I mean,
you think I wouldn't? Look, I'm kind of an introvert myself. This is all an act, dude. By the time I leave here, I go home, and it's me in Studio A, and that's it. I don't have to deal with the public here.
I got a new song for you coming up. I ain't going to do it today. I'm almost done with this stuff. Am I in another
universe? Yeah, that's about right. Yeah. Every day I ask that question.
I was thinking of you when I wrote it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Well, there you have it, kids. Mr. Mark Wicklund from the studio from Radio Memphis. That came from an appearance on Radio Memphis in the morning sometime back. Every Wednesday over there at radio-memphis.com around noon Central Time, we bring in a singer-songwriter, and we have a chat, have a fine time. It's always more fun than the law allows. That's kind of how that should work. So there you go. You heard what's coming up next time on the program. In the meantime, I want you all to take a moment to think about where you want to be as an American. We're getting to that point. It's unfortunate. Don't bury your head in the sand. Don't hide from this stuff. I don't like this. This is horrible. Make it go away. It's going to take us to work together to make it all go away. So let's do that, won't we? In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. For God's sake, stop shooting each other. And by the way, if you do have kids, give them a big hug, because it could be far worse. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been from Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.